Imagine you're an Israelite. Your parents were slaves in Egypt, but you were born free in the desert. The desert's a hot and dry place, but, you know, the Lord, by His grace, provided water and food. You were surviving and safe in that respect, even if you weren't exactly thriving. Now, true to His promise, the Lord had now brought you to the edge of the promised land. You could look across the water and see it, the land that He promised. He miraculously parted the Jordan River so you could cross over, the same way He parted the Red Sea for your ancestors to cross over out of Egypt. And here you are in the promised land, the land that flows with milk and honey, ready for the good life. This is it. We're here. It's all easy going and smooth sailing from this point on. Let's go. Then you turn the first corner and there's Jericho. And it's standing between you and the promises that God made you. And you can't help but think, well, what's up with this? Whatever happened to easy going and smooth sailing, right? Now, imagine you're you. I know that'll be harder for some of you than for others, but imagine that you're you. You recognized that living without God is like being a slave, and that trying to satisfy your cravings is like drinking salt water. It promises to quench your thirst. In the end, it only makes you more thirsty. You admitted that living your way can never satisfy your need for peace and purpose in your life. So you turned away from life without God and turned your life over to God, trusting in Jesus' life, death, and resurrection. You were born again, alive spiritually now for the very first time, alive in a brand new way. And the Spirit of God brings that peace and purpose into your life. And you're thinking, this is it. It's all easy going and smooth sailing from here. Let's go. And then you turn the first corner, and there's Jericho. There's a wall standing between you and the promises of God. And you can't help but think, what's up with this? This isn't what I signed up for. It's not what I expected. What happened to easy going and smooth sailing? What happened to once I give my life to the Lord, everything will straighten out, the potholes will be filled in, and the hills will be knocked down, and it'll just be, you know, easy street. I mean, you thought the hard part was over, and now, what are you supposed to do? You can't get saved again. You've already given your life to the Lord. What are you supposed to do now? Last week, we did a textual study of Joshua 6, and we divided the chapter into three sections. Really, the chapter divides itself into three paragraphs. Verses 1 through 5 told us that God's plan was given. It was the Lord telling Joshua what He wanted the people to do. Verses 6 through 16, God's plan was followed. The people do what the Lord had told them to do. And then in verses 17 through 27, God's plan was effective. It was bearing fruit. The Lord did what He said He would do. So today we're going to look at the same passage, but we're going to take it out of the then and there and bring it into the here and now. What we're going to learn is how to deal with the Jerichos in our lives, those things that come between us and the promises the Lord has given us, the obstacles that would otherwise keep us from the life the Lord has promised. And it's probably no coincidence that even this week, preparing this study, there was wall after wall, Jericho after Jericho, everything from physical problems to you name it, all kinds of stuff going on that just seemed to be an obstacle to moving into this thing. So for me, this is an extremely relevant passage. In fact, a friend of mine told me this, and I think I agree. It's almost the kind of thing where I'd like to teach a little and then go sit down in the front row myself and hear what was said. Because this is not just for you, this is for me. This is for all of us. So anyway, here we are in chapter 6. And let's just start it out this way. Last week we read the chapter, we studied it verse by verse, word by word, and dug into those textual details. So today it's just going to be kind of an application, the precepts, the timeless truths that we can apply to our own lives. And the first thing that we need to understand here is that we all have our own private Jerichos. We all have them. You know, you step out in faith, the Lord stops the current, you cross into the Spirit-filled life, and blam, you run into a wall. And that happens to each one of us. You know, this side of eternity, there will always be something that requires faith to overcome. That's just the way it is. You can be a new believer or a seasoned saint. There's always something. There's always going to be something that requires faith to overcome. See, that's God's design. If you're the one that keeps running into walls, keeps running into obstacles that keep you from the life God promised you, well, that doesn't make you special. That makes you one of the rest of us. Because we all face those things, and I'm convinced that that's part of God's plan. It's God's design, it's God's method. I guess you could look at it as God's faith-building program. He's always working on us that way. Think about Jesus. You don't have to turn there, but you can make a note. This story is in Matthew 3 and 4. I mean, the Lord. He's about 30 years old or so, and he knows it's time for him to begin his ministry. And he leaves, you know, his mom's house and his brothers and sisters. And he goes down to see John the Baptist. And you know that story. John says, you should be baptizing me, not me baptizing you. And Jesus says we have to do everything the right way. He needed to identify with sin and sinners. And the voice of God speaks, this is my beloved son. At least that's how they do it in the movies. What if God sounds like Don Knotts? Could happen, you know. Actually, they thought it was thunder, so he probably sounds more like James Earl Jones. But anyway, this is my beloved son in whom I'm well pleased. And then it says you could see the Spirit descended the same way a dove would descend on him. And so here it is, you know, the incarnate Son of God, with the Spirit visibly coming upon him and the voice of the Father, you know, letting everyone know that, yeah, this is my son and I'm pleased with him. And you'd think if anybody had it made, if anybody could just kind of take off on a nice, easy stroll, it would be Jesus, right? But what's the first thing that happens to him? He's led by the Spirit into the desert where he's confronted, tempted, tested by Satan himself. For 40 days. He didn't accidentally stumble into the desert. He was led by the Spirit into the desert for this time. Talk about a Jericho to overcome. Talk about an obstacle. Satan himself. Everything that Jesus was going to accomplish, that is everything except our salvation, Satan offered him a shortcut to. You want to be king of the world? Just worship me. Use your supernatural power to turn these stones into bread if you're hungry. Very real temptations, led by the Spirit. Jesus obviously faced one heck of a Jericho. You know, our other New Testament hero, Paul the Apostle, not much different. You know that story. He's on the way to Damascus and he's struck down and he has this conversation with someone that he soon comes to understand is Jesus, and he's struck blind for 3 days and then he's given his sight again. And he immediately goes into the synagogue and begins to preach that Jesus is the Messiah. And what happens? People want to kill him. I mean, they're out to get him. They start plotting and scheming. We're just going to take this guy out. And so much so, he has to hide in a basket and be lowered, you know, kind of like that thing in chapter 2 where the spies were lowered out in a basket. They have to put Paul in a basket and lower him out just so he doesn't get killed. I mean, talk about a Jericho. You know, you'd think he's on easy street. This guy's a religious expert in the scriptures. If anybody should have it made, it would be him. But no, first thing that happens is he's confronted with these very real death threats and he has to sneak out of town just to survive. We all have these Jerichos. You know, no one gets to go around Jericho. There's no detour to follow. There's no safe way or trouble-free way to kind of get around that obstacle between you and the Lord. And that's why I can say that we all have our own private Jerichos. Your Jericho might be some kind of weakness in character. Maybe you're somebody who just has a hair trigger and a red-hot temper. And the slightest little thing goes wrong, and the next thing you know, the veins in your neck are bulging, and you're shouting and screaming and waving your arms, and you're just mad and upset, and your heart beats. And that's not just once in a great while. That's like every day at least once. And you make up, whoa, I've got red hair. That's what it is. You know, or my great-grandparents were from Ireland. That's the problem. But every day you have to deal with this, and you understand that a person who's given their life to the Lord, a person who's indwelt by the Spirit of the Lord, isn't one who really should be blowing up like a volcano once, twice, three times a day. Every time you hit a red light instead of a green light, you know, road rage, all the rest, just going off. And maybe that's really a struggle for you. That's a Jericho. That's a Jericho. We all have some kind of Jericho. Maybe your Jericho is an old hurt that just won't go away. Some childhood neglect or abuse, a failed relationship, you know, a breakup or a divorce or some tragedy or loss that you've experienced, and it just hurts your heart and it never seems to go away. And even when you're not thinking about it, when you least expect it, it's like water running to the low part of the valley. For some reason, that thought, that memory, that experience just keeps coming back. And you're saying, Lord, I hate this. This is killing me. This is holding me back. I want the life you promised me, and then I'm minding my own business, and all of a sudden I have this movie in my head of the worst moments of my life, and I go right back to those tears and that fear and that shame and that guilt and anger and all those negative emotions. God, what's wrong with me and what's wrong with you? How come you haven't delivered me from that stuff? Some old hurt. For a lot of folks, you know, Jericho is that sense of inadequacy. It's that feeling that, well, everybody else is all right, but not me. Everybody else has it all together, but, you know, me, I've got struggles and problems. I tried to tell my kids when they were in high school. I said, do you ever sit in class and look around and think about how everybody else is just cool except you? And they both went, yeah, I do feel that way. I said, well, that's how they feel too. They think you're cool and have it together and that there's something wrong with them. This sense of inadequacy, it just seems to be kind of built into our culture, if not human nature in general. You know, this whole thing about I'm not attractive enough. My nose is too big, or my nose is too small, or my ears stick out, or they lay back against my head. You know, I'm too fat, I'm too skinny, I'm too tall, I'm too short. There's something wrong with me, and I don't measure up, and they won't, you know, I can't be one of the cool people. I'll never be successful in life. I mean, God, why couldn't you have made me with blue eyes? If I just had blue eyes, everything would be perfect. That's how we live, and, you know, and it's not just kids, it's adults, this sense of not measuring up to, I wonder who made up the standard anyway? Who made up the attractiveness standard? And who gets to say, I mean, I've known guys, I roomed with a guy in Nashville for a while. He was a single guy. There were two girls, two young women that worked in the office of the apartments. And one was just pleasant and positive and just sweet and nice and helpful. And the other one, quite frankly, was not. She was just kind of snarly. Now, the snarly one looked a whole lot more like the girls in the magazines and on TV and movies than the really nice girl. And I remember he was telling me once, oh, boy, I really like the, you know, the snarly one. She's really good looking, and I'd like to go out with her, but I don't think she'll go out with me. I kind of kidded around with her once, and she gave me the stink eye, and, you know, that's not going to work out. And I remember thinking, well, what about the other gal? I mean, she's, golly, I mean, you just don't find someone that nice, you know, every day. Oh, I could never ask her out. Well, why not? Well, she's overweight. You idiot. You moron. You would marry this gal who would treat you like dirt and probably end up leaving you, and then you wouldn't even get to know this obviously wonderful person just because you grew up in a culture that said her waist size was a couple of inches too big or something. That's just crazy. And then how do you think that she feels? She goes through her life a wonderful person, being a wonderful friend, probably make a wonderful wife and be a wonderful mother. But because of this appearance thing, she goes through life feeling like she doesn't measure up. We all have these Jerichos. You know, maybe it's the other extreme. Maybe you were perfect. Maybe you got straight A's. You were the best looking guy, the best looking gal in the school, you know, king and queen of the prom or captain of the team or the head cheerleader or whatever the situation was. I mean, you just had it so together that life pretty much rolled out a red carpet and wherever you went, you know, if you got stuck in traffic, if you were a gal, then the guys would let you in, you know, just because you kind of wink at them and smile. But now you grow up and now you've got to live up to that. You got straight A's in high school, now you got to get straight A's in college, and it's a little bit harder. It's a little bit harder, there's a little bit more work. And if you want to be captain of that team or the head cheerleader on that squad, it's a whole nother level of ability and skill and commitment that you've got to make. But you know, you've always been that perfect person and the pressure to perform is just unbearable. And you go back into your dorm room at night, and you just pray to God, I can't do this. I'm so miserable. I'm so unhappy because I can't be this perfect person. It's a Jericho. We all face these Jerichos, our own private Jerichos. Now, your Jericho may be imposing. Imagine those Israelites. They come from Gilgal, a couple of miles away, and they, you know, go past that last set of palm trees into the clearing, and there's Jericho. It's up on top of a hill. And up at the top, there's a wall, giant wall. And then there's a little open space, and down the hill a little further, and there's another wall. And they've got big gates, you know, and they're armed men guarding and controlling the whole thing. And you thought that once you got across the water, well, I mean, God miraculously parched the Jordan River. Oh, man, we've got it made. What could possibly hang us up now? And you turn the corner, and there it is, Jericho. Oh, man, now what am I supposed to do? Jericho might be imposing and looming over you like that wall, but here's what you need to remember. Don't let that bother you. Don't let that frighten you, because we have in this chapter an example of how to defeat the Jerichos. And I don't usually like the 9 steps, the 4 keys, the 7 ways, and those kinds of deals, because they're formulas that, you know, most of the time, Lord doesn't work by a predictable formula. You ever notice that when Jesus healed people? One time he just touched them, next time he made mud, and the next time he wasn't even there. He was, you know, in the next county, and he just spoke the word. And so there's no pattern, there's no predictable pattern for these things. But there are, in this passage, 3 things that the Israelites did to overcome Jericho, and it's the same 3 things that we can do. Look at verse 2. And the Lord said to Joshua, see, I have given Jericho into your hand, its king and the mighty men of valor. What's the first thing we need to do to overcome the Jerichos in our lives? Listen to the Lord and know that He means what He says. Listen to the Lord and know that He means what He says. If God says it, that settles it. And the Lord said, I have given Jericho into your hand. It's yours. The Lord gives it. You know, that great Sunday school story that most of us are familiar with about David and Goliath. And little David faces that Goliath kind of the same way the Israelites face Jericho, kind of the same way that we face the Jerichos in our lives, whatever they may be. And of course, nobody thought he had a chance. You know, his own brothers, all the King Saul and all of the Israeli army thought this kid doesn't, it's a suicide trip. He's going to go out there and mouth off and the giant's going to squash him like a bug. This isn't even going to be fun. It's not even going to be a sporting event. You know, this is just crazy. And Goliath himself says, what are you, you know, you guys are sending out a flea. You know, what is this? Is this your mighty warrior? You know, where's Saul? He's a head taller than everybody else. Where's your king? And there's little David out there, 12 to 16 years old with a sling. And when they challenged David, David, you know, you can't do this, or who do you think you are? David had been listening to the Lord and he said, the battle is the Lord's. David, you can't do this. You get no argument from me. I can't do this. I'm inadequate. I'm too short. I'm too weak. I don't have the strength. I'm not a good enough shot with the sling even. You know, all these excuses he could have come up with, but instead he just realized that the Lord had given him that victory, and that's simply what he said, or exactly what he said. The battle is the Lord's. See, he knew he was where the Lord wanted him to be. He knew he was where the Lord had led him to be. And that's exactly the same case with the Israelites. They didn't stumble across the river. They didn't just kind of trip over there wandering aimlessly. They followed the Lord, the Lord's Spirit. You know, the presence of the Lord, the Ark of the Covenant was there in the middle of the water. They all had to walk right by it. God is with us. Not only was the Ark with them, but look at verse 6. Joshua, the son of Nun, called the priests and said to them, take up the Ark of the Covenant and let seven priests bear seven trumpets of ram's horns before the Ark of the Lord. Now, if you weren't here last week, or if you don't remember the story, this, of course, is, you know, they marched around the city of Jericho one time for 6 days, and on the seventh day, they marched around seven times, and then when Joshua gave the instruction, they shouted and the walls came tumbling down. But the Ark went with him. See, not only was the Ark with him, not only was the presence of the Lord with him, but the presence of the Lord was surrounding that city. The presence of the Lord encompassed, enveloped that Jericho. That's why David knew the victory was his, because he knew God was with him. This battle's not mine. This battle is the Lord's. I read this and I thought it was so good I wanted to pass it along. See, when it comes to these Jerichos, when it comes to these kinds of battles, it's faith, not finesse, that gives us the victory. Doesn't matter how good you are on your feet or how well you handle a sword or whatever the weapon of choice is in the particular battle you're in. That's not it. It's faith. Faith in the Lord, trusting the Lord, resting in the Lord. That's where the victory is. That's where the victory comes from. Turn to Deuteronomy chapter 9. Right before Joshua, Deuteronomy chapter 9. I promise not to get into Bible bingo today, but this is one that we need to put our own eyes on and see for ourselves. And right at the top of the chapter, Deuteronomy chapter 9, verse 1. Hear, O Israel, you are to cross over the Jordan today and go in to dispossess nations greater and mightier than yourself, cities great and fortified up to heaven. That must have been what Jericho looked like. A people great and tall, the descendants of the Anakim, whom you know and of whom you've heard it said, who can stand before the descendants of Anak? Therefore, understand today that the Lord your God is he who goes over before you as a consuming fire. He will destroy them and bring them down before you. So you shall drive them out and destroy them quickly, as the Lord has said to you. Don't think in your heart, after the Lord your God has cast them out before you, saying, because of my righteousness the Lord has brought me in to possess this land. But it's because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord is driving them out from before you. It's not because of your righteousness or the uprightness of your heart that you go in to possess their land, but because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord your God drives them out from before you, and that he may fulfill the word which the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And we've reviewed that in past weeks, this promise for the land. Therefore, verse 6, understand that the Lord your God is not giving you this good land to possess because of your righteousness, for you are a stiff-necked people. Read that last verse again. The Lord isn't giving you this good land to possess because of your righteousness, for you're a stiff-necked people. The land was a gift, not a reward. They didn't earn it. They didn't deserve it. They didn't have the strength to take it on their own. In fact, in weeks to come, we'll see that when they try that, they fail miserably. It's a gift. The victory is a gift, and that's how it is with the victories in our lives. They're gifts from God, not because of anything about us, but in spite of everything about us. The Lord gives gifts, but we've got to listen to the Lord. See, not only will our strengths and strategies fail, but they'll get in God's way. I don't know about you, but I find that to be the most common problem I face, is just me getting in the way of what God wants to do. He's doing it. He's got a plan. He's got a program. He's got the power. He's got the strength. He's got everything and to unfold this thing in my life, but then I just get in the way. I clog up the pipes, you know, with myself, with my own plans and my own crazy ideas, when I should need to just listen to him. See, that's really hard for us to do. We always want to fight our own fight and set our own course. Isn't that true? Maybe it's just guys, I don't know. We want to, what's the problem? Well, I know just what to do about that. I can fix it. I can make it right. That's just our nature. And when it comes to these spiritual battles, we do the same thing. We think we're going to fight our own fight, set our own course. We get so busy doing that we never take time to listen to what the Lord has to say about it. We don't mind telling him what's on our mind, but we rarely, if ever, listen to what's on his. Listening to God, it can take a lot of forms. You know, reading the Word can be a form of listening to God, but there's that moment where you kind of close the book, or at the very least, you close your eyes and you listen. Lord, what are you telling me? And I can tell you from firsthand experience, that works. I don't know if it happens every week, but more weeks than not, there comes a point towards the end of the week where I'm in the passage that we're supposed to study Sunday, and I, you know, I've made some notes and I've done some word studies in the Hebrew and the Greek and blah, blah, blah. And maybe I've even looked at a couple of commentaries to see what Ironside or G. Campbell Morgan or somebody has to say about it. But there always comes that point where I have to get up from my desk and walk around and go, Lord, what in the world is there in this passage that you would have me share, or that what you would have me apply to my own life and then share with your people on Sunday? And it's almost predictable, because if I just get up and walk around, sometimes I'll get up and I'll walk in here and the lights are off, it's dark and it's cool, and I'll just kind of sit in the front row, and or I'll, you know, take a walk around or go downstairs and make sure the back door is shut, something like that. And always there comes this point where it's like, ooh, I got to get back to my office quick before I forget. You know, I got to write this down. I got to type this into the notes. You're in the Word, but then you got to take time to listen. Same when you're praying. We went through this a while back at our Wednesday night when we were doing our discipleship series. And a lot of you were there. And for those of you that weren't, I'll just tell you real quickly what we did. We took a few minutes, I don't know, 5 minutes to 10 minutes, and made a list of everything we could think of to pray about. Everything from that leaky water hose on my car all the way to world peace in Afghanistan and Iraq. You know, and everything, and every sick person, and every money problem, and everything. We wrote it all down, and then we said, okay, now put that away, and let's pray. Not about that stuff. Put that stuff away. Now that we've got that out of the way, we're ready to pray. And we just sat silently for another 10, 15 minutes to wait on the Lord to listen to what the Lord had to say, because I don't know if your prayer life is like mine, but way too often mine is, oh God, help me out of this disaster, thanks, amen. And then I'm like, and the Lord's going, hey, I've got something to tell you, but you don't listen. So the Word, reading the Word, and then listen, pray and listen, fellowship. You'd be in fellowship, you'd be around the other believers, you know, an iron sharpening iron, and you're sharing struggles, and you're sharing victories, and you know, and you're helping each other out and all that. And then you can't just shut that off and go back to, you know, life without the Lord. You have to listen. Stop and listen. Lord, what are you teaching me? What are you showing me? Should I help this person out? I don't know if everybody realizes this, but I'm a bit of a tightwad. You know? I mean, I don't mind spending money when it's time to spend. You know, I want to do it right the first time. I like to have the good stuff. I'm not buying the bottoms, you know, when I can afford it. But I don't just kind of throw my money away. And there was a fella here, I don't know, I think it was 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and I met him out in the family room after service. And I hadn't seen him before, and he introduced himself, and hi, how it's going, and then he said, well, you really want to know? And I said, yeah, what's going on? And he told me about, you know, some troubles he was having, and a big part of that was financial. He'd spent all the money that he had getting squared away with some, with the PUD and the phone company and stuff like that, and now he didn't have any money to put gas in his car to go to work and do the things he had to do. And I'm thinking, well, man, real bummer. See ya. You know, I got to go talk to somebody else, or it's just not in my nature, you know. Or I'd say, well, here, go talk to Jeff. He'll help you. You know? Something. But maybe it was for the purpose of this lesson today. The Lord just impressed on me, why don't you pry your wallet open, you tightwad, and give that guy a few bucks? And so I did. And my wife saw me. And later I got home and she said, did you give that guy some money? I mean, not because I shouldn't, but because I can't believe you did, you know? I said, yeah, I reached in, I reached in, blew the dust out, reached in and pulled the big bill from the back, which is never too big, but you know, and just gave it to him. That's listening to the Lord. And in fact, you know, to be perfectly honest with you, I had this little tug of war in my head. You know, God's going, give the guy 20 bucks. And I'm going, no. I had to work hard for that 20 bucks. And I never have cash in my wallet anyway. I might need that later today to buy peanuts. Now give the guy the 20 bucks. And, you know, fortunately, I listened and I responded and I gave the guy the... I helped the guy out, and that you know, me helping him isn't my point. It's the listening to the Lord that it blessed me. I think it blessed him. It probably blessed my wife to see me do that, you know, and anybody else that was watching. Listen to the Lord. That's the first thing. If we're going to defeat the Jerichos in our lives, we got to listen to the Lord. In verse 2, the Lord just told him, I'm going to do this for you. Not because of anything about you, but in spite of everything about you, I'm going to give you this victory. Listen to the Lord. And then number 2, be still before the Lord. Look at verse 10. Now Joshua had commanded the people, saying, you shall not shout or make any noise with your voice, nor shall a word proceed out of your mouth until the day I say to you, shout. Then you shall shout. Now, wait a minute. Think about that for a second. Once a day for 6 days. seven times on the seventh day. So that means the first 12 times they marched around the city, no one said a word. And I think we touched on this last week. You know, the guys on top of the wall had to be saying, your mother wears army boots, you know, and expecting to get them. Or they could have been walking around saying, oh, see that crack in the wall? That'd be a good handhold. We could get in there when we climb up over. Or, you know, there's a weakness here, or maybe we should do this, talking about. But no, don't speak a word, Joshua told them. Not a single word. And apparently they didn't. One more passage. I promise this is the last one. 1 Kings chapter 19. Just take a right from Joshua. Get past Joshua judges Ruth. We'll get into the history books we're talking about here. And then we want to find 1 Kings chapter 19. Now you Bible students, that just that much might trigger something or ring a bell in you to know where we're headed here. The prophet Elijah, probably pronounced Elia, but I'm calling him Elijah today. Down in verse 9, short version, Elijah had a frustrating ministry. And so he goes out and he goes into a cave, spent the night in that place, and behold, the word of the Lord came to him. And he said to him, what are you doing in here, Elijah? You know, you're supposed to be out being a prophet. What are you doing hiding in a cave? So he said, I have been very zealous for the Lord God of hosts, for the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant. You know, those turkeys, they've torn down your altars and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left. You know, I'm the only one left. And now they seek to take my life. And he said, it is the Lord, go out, stand on the mountain before the Lord. And behold, the Lord passed by. And a great and strong wind tore into the mountains and broke the rocks in pieces before the Lord. But the Lord wasn't in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord wasn't in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord wasn't in the fire. And after the fire, a still, small voice. See, we're looking for earthquakes and fire and, you know, drama. You know, the Lord brings an asteroid down to earth, and then we wonder, I wonder what the Lord's trying to tell us. But what about just being still before the Lord? You kind of have to be still before you can listen. I guess those two work together, don't they? See, when the Jericho gets in your way, the flesh wants to freak out. Fear and doubt rise up. I can't do this. I can't overcome this. I don't deserve this. Right? That miracle stuff, that Jesus stuff might work for somebody else, but it won't work for me. I don't deserve it. But to overcome all that stuff and just be still before the Lord, a couple of Psalms, the Lord tells us the same thing several times. Psalm 4:4, he says, meditate within your heart on your bed and be still. And in Psalm 46:10, and we all know this, be still and know that I am God. I love that song. Be still and know that He is God. You got to be still. And you know, on his last night on earth, Jesus, there with his best friends, pouring out his heart, knowing what's going to happen to him, knowing he's going to be arrested, knowing he's going to be tortured, knowing he's going to be crucified and suffocated under the weight of his own body, knowing that 3 days later he was going to be resurrected, was going to actually resurrect himself. He said, no one takes my life, I lay it down and I take it back up. But knowing all that, his disciples, as he kept talking about this, you know, I mean, he'd been talking about it for weeks, maybe months. I'm going to go to Jerusalem. I'm going to be arrested. I'm going to be killed. And they didn't get it for a while, but now it's kind of coming down to the wire, and they're starting to, you know, I go to my Father. Well, what do you mean? You go to the Father. Show us the Father. You've seen me. You've seen the Father. And they're starting to get freaked out. And what does Jesus tell them? Let not your hearts be troubled. Be still, in other words. Be still and know that I am God. Just be still. God's going to work out his plan. Don't run around like, you know, chicken with your head cut off. Just be still. Be faithful. Be patient. Listen to the Lord. Be still. Number three, listen, be still. And the last one, the key to overcoming these Jerichos in our life is obey the Lord. Listen to the Lord. Be still before the Lord. And obey the Lord. Look at verse 20 back in Joshua 6. So the people shouted when the priests blew the trumpets. And it happened when the people heard the sound of the trumpets, and the people shouted with a great shout, that the wall fell down flat. And the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and they took the city. All they're doing is what God told them to. Now, it didn't look like it could possibly work. Just walk around the thing, you know, 12 times, and on time number 13, yell. And I'm sure they're all going, oh, that'll do it. That's probably why he told them not to talk. Because they'd be going, this can't possibly work. I don't know what Joshua was thinking about. We've got to do something. We should be sharpening our knives, you know, our spears, not just walking around quietly. But they did what the Lord said. They obeyed the Lord. They marched around the city, you know, a total of 13 times. And when the time was right, Joshua said, shout, and they shouted. And, you know, I heard a tape of a guy who had a ram's horn, like these ram's horns that they blew. And you're thinking it's going to go, you know, like a train horn or a semi horn or something. And this guy actually took a real ram's horn and it went. It was about that loud. So multiply that by 7. You know, it wasn't like, you know, the sound waves caused an earthquake and tumbled things down. They blew the 7 trumpets, and then 2.5 million people shouted praise to God. Maybe they said hallelujah. Maybe they said something else, but they were shouting, you know, glory, glory to our God. Great is our God. And the walls came down. They just did what God said to do. And then the last part of the verse, verse 20, tells us what happened next. The people went up into the city. Every man, every person went up straight before him. I mean, the walls were down. They didn't have to climb around. There were no little, you know, small battles, little pockets of combat. The walls fell down. The people were already in there, shaking in their boots, scared to death, because they knew who the God of the Hebrews was. And now the walls fall down, and people just walked in. They just walked in, straight in. And they utterly destroyed all that was in the city, both man and woman, young and old, ox, sheep, donkey, with the edge of the sword. And we talked about that last week. So if you're wondering about that, get the tape of last week. And then down in verse 24, it picks up this theme. But they burned the city and all that was in it with fire. Only the silver and gold and the vessels of bronze and iron they put into the treasury of the house of the Lord. They didn't take anything for themselves. The only things they rescued were items that would go in the treasury of the Lord. Now, next week, or 2 weeks, it's going to be in chapter 7, we're going to see that actually there's one guy who did kind of pocket a little bit of the booty, the bounty, and that caused a problem, but that's for later. They went up and straight in. They went up straight in. They did what the Lord said. The walls come down. They go up. They destroy everything they're supposed to destroy. They save what they're supposed to save in obedience to the Lord. Verse 23 back up tells us, and the young men who had been spies went in and brought out Rahab, or Rahab if you'd rather, her father, her mother, her brother, and all that she had. So they brought out all her relatives and left them outside the camp of Israel. They kept their promise. They kept their promise. Now remember, we kind of touched on this last week too, and we're almost through here. Rahab and her family were doomed. They were going to be among those that were put to death, each and every one, young, old, man, woman, and child. And what made the difference? What was it that brought about her deliverance? She believed. She trusted. She had faith in the God of the Hebrews. She'd heard about him. She'd heard the testimony. And rather than in there shaking in her boots, you know, we're not home. She actually protected those guys, and there was this promise made. You hang this scarlet thread out your window so we know which house is yours. And when we take this city, we're going to keep you and your whole family safe. See, it wasn't what she did, it was what she believed. We all face Jerichos all the time. And you know what? We always will. The Lord is teaching us, if we will listen, if we will be still, if we will obey, then He will fight the fight. He'll win the battle. And we move on to the next one with our faith, our trust in Him that much stronger, that much more fearless. You know, forget the wall. Next time we're going to go head to head with bows and arrows and swords and spears because, hey, the Lord is with us. And next thing you know, victory after victory after victory. Let the Lord fight the victory. Just listen to Him. Be still before Him and then do what He says to do and don't do what He doesn't say to do. And the Lord will win the victory. Those Jerichos, we can't take them down, but the Lord can. The Lord will.